Time now for Western Michigan at Work. Each Tuesday evening at this time, the White Sales Corporation of Scotts, Michigan, brings you a program about the industries of Western Michigan and the people who work in them. Through these programs, we hope our listeners may become better acquainted with Western Michigan at Work. The program, Beach Products, originally scheduled for tonight, will be heard 2 weeks from tonight. And this evening, we visit Consumer Sand and Gravel. Now, here is your guide, Dr. Willis Dunbar.
Concrete and steel are the foundation materials for most of our modern construction work. The steel mills and the whole process by which steel is made are very much in the news. We hear much less about concrete, perhaps because this industry is not so centralized. Concrete is a mixture of cement with what is called aggregate, which hardens to form a strong and enduring substance for walls, floors, and other surfaces. This morning, I visited the Consumer Sand and Gravel plant here in Kalamazoo to see concrete in the making. Way back in 1903, a man named James Lau started taking gravel from the 100-acre plant on Nazareth Road, which the Consumer Sand and Gravel Company now owns. It was a very small-scale business back in those days, but in recent years, it has grown tremendously. Richard Butcher, the present head of the firm, formed a partnership with Lau in 1934. More recently, the business has been incorporated. Mammoth cranes first scooped the sand and gravel out of a vast mountain of this material and put it in hoppers, which feed it out on a long conveyor belt. This conveyor belt elevates it in a steady stream up a hill and into a crusher, which breaks up the larger stones. Then it goes on to another long conveyor belt, which carries it up again to other crushers and grinders. There is such an intricate maze of conveyors that it's very difficult to understand what happens to it from this point on. Streams of water are played onto it, and screens of different sizes separate the larger and the smaller stones. These screens are easily interchangeable, so that it's possible to get almost any size of washed gravel which the customer wants. While I was watching, one chute was opened, and out into a truck came the pea-sized gravel, which is used to surface blacktop roads. One conveyor carries the sand away into a separate pile, while still another carries the aggregate to be used in making concrete across the road to the concrete plant. Here it is mixed according to the exact requirements of the builder, with cement, and conveyed away in large trucks, which keep the mixture agitated until it is at the place where it's to be used. The cement, by the way, comes from Cement City, Michigan, in large trucks, either in sacks or in the bulk. The Consumer Sand and Gravel plant, I was told, is the only such plant in Kalamazoo where sand and gravel are dug, processed, and delivered by the same organization. The number and requirements for different kinds of sand, gravel, and concrete are almost infinite. Architects and builders specify the exact strength of concrete which they need. For example, they may indicate 3,000-pound concrete. Well, that means that the concrete must be able to withstand a pressure of 3,000 pounds per square inch. Now, that's very carefully measured and tested through an independent laboratory here in Kalamazoo. The laboratory reports the results of its tests to the architect, the builder, and the maker of the concrete. I asked Mr. Butcher how long that big mountain of sand and gravel would hold out. Well, he said that is one of the uncertainties of the business. You can't tell what's below the surface without running test holes, which are very expensive. It is always possible that further excavation will run into a clay deposit. But from where I stood, it certainly looked like there was a lot of sand and gravel left in that mountain. Of course, another factor is the rate of growth of the city of Kalamazoo and the community around Kalamazoo. The faster this region's industries and homes grow, the more that pile is going to be depleted. Consumers have a fleet of 12 big trucks which deliver to the contractor, all to or to the small consumer, and they're on the move most of an 8 or 9 hour day. Located on the property of the Consumer Sand and Gravel Company is another firm which is engaged in the manufacture of cement blocks. This is the Consumer Cement Block Company. It's a separate business, although it does purchase its concrete from the Consumer Sand and Gravel Company. These cement blocks are fabricated in what's called a lithoblock machine, which is quite an amazing thing. The concrete comes into the machine quite dry. It's dumped into a mold, and that mold is vibrated and tamped with great force by an automatic contrivance. It requires only a matter of seconds to produce the cement block. The block is then taken from the machine, put on a tray, and transferred to a steel cart. These steel carts are then wheeled into large rooms, and live steam is driven over the cement blocks, penetrating them for 7 hours. When they come out of the steam room, they're solid as a rock. Cement blocks also are built to conform to different specifications. The usual cement block will withstand a pressure of about 1,000 pounds per square inch. They sell, incidentally, for about 17 cents at the yard, or 19 cents delivered. The molds in the lithoblock machine may be altered to make any shaped block which is desired. I saw some cement blocks with one rounded corner, others with two rounded corners, and others to fit where a metal window sash is to be used. The company also makes what's called a slag block. The aggregate of the slag block consists of a byproduct of the steel mill, slag. It makes a very lightweight block, almost as strong as a regular cement block, and yet capable of being penetrated by a driven nail. Its only disadvantage is that it's slightly more expensive than the cement block. Well, I emerged from this adventure in concrete with surprise that there are so many different kinds and varieties. Most of us don't realize this when we casually mix up some concrete in the backyard wheelbarrow to repair the garage floor. Concrete, one of the basic elements in modern building, we take more for granted than perhaps any other component. Yet the making of different formulas for concrete and the processing of the different component parts constitute a very skilled job. Because when a bridge or the wall of a schoolhouse or the balcony of a public building is put up, no one can afford to guess about whether or not the concrete used is actually going to do the job it's designed to do. I'll be back in a moment with a story about the availability of land for industrial expansion here in Kalamazoo.
Western Michigan at Work is sponsored by White Sales Corporation of Scotts, Michigan. They are local distributors for the Sullivan line of heavy-duty, water-cooled industrial air compressors. Their stock starts with a 15-horsepower size and includes the 30, 50, and 75-horsepower machines. They also have filters to clean the air before it goes to the compressor and after-coolers to cool the air after it is compressed, as well as special tanks to hold the compressed air. These items with a motor from their stock will allow them to immediately furnish a complete unit. For further information, call White Sales at Scotts. Phone 371. Now back to Dr. Willis Dunbar.
Let me call your attention to a study which has just been completed by the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Community Research. The study was sponsored by the Institute and the Kalamazoo Chamber of Commerce in cooperation with the Kalamazoo City Planning Department. It's a study of industrial land supply in Kalamazoo City and Township. Similar studies are underway in other townships in the county which have zoning ordinances, Comstock, Portage, Ostomo, and Cooper, but they're not yet finished. The report just made in printed form was prepared by Samuel V. Bennett with the assistance of Thomas W. Froome. How much land in Greater Kalamazoo is available and suitable for industrial use? Well, that question is of vital importance from two angles. First, the possibility of new industries locating in this community, and second, the possibility of existing industries expanding. These investigators found that in the city and the township of Kalamazoo, there are 44 parcels of land which are vacant and available in the areas zoned for industry, their total area being 455 acres. Well, that looks pretty good. But when you begin to analyze the suitability of those 44 parcels of land for industry, it's a somewhat different picture. There are only 11 parcels that have sewers, electricity, and municipal water supply, and there are only two of them which have these facilities plus railroad lines. Thus, the study concludes that there is a shortage of attractive industrial sites in the Kalamazoo area, although there is plenty of land available. In fact, the total figure that I mentioned, that is 455 acres, does not include another 272 acres which are vacant and owned by existing industries and might be used for expansion. Nor does it include some 715 acres of farmland now in use within the industrial zoned areas in the township that might be acquired for industrial use. Now, if you add these three figures together, you come up with 1,442 acres of land within the city and township of Kalamazoo that might be used for new industries or industrial expansion. The study then goes on to investigate the possibilities of expanding gas, water, electricity, and sewer facilities to take care of new industrial demands. This is principally a matter of providing these services within the township. Says the study, and I quote, "Continued effort to provide such service facilities merits the immediate attention of local, civic, and governmental leaders." The report also mentions that a great deal depends on the attitude of local business and governmental leaders toward expansion. All any plan for community growth can do, it says, is to point up the potentialities of an area for industrial expansion. Whether the people want to exploit and develop those potentialities is reflected in the attitude of local leaders and elected officials. Well, now that's a rather interesting observation. Of course, there are certain obvious advantages to a community which come from an expanding industrial life. Merchants welcome the prospect of a larger sales volume. Service and professional occupations become more attractive. The whole city has the feeling of getting ahead. But there also are marked disadvantages. When the demand for labor outruns the local labor supply, and when an influx of new people overtaxes the supply of housing, and when essential public services cannot keep pace with the rising demand, serious problems arise. A person of conservative temperament is inclined to feel that a slow, steady growth, or no growth at all, is much to be preferred over the helter-skelter solicitation of new industries. Did you ever stop to ask yourself, how big should my town be? A great many people would not like to live in a huge city, but how big is huge? In the past, cities have grown more or less by chance. They lacked plan, and frequently when growth was rapid, there were mistakes made that were very costly later on. More and more today, cities are planning for their future, taking stock of their potentialities and their resources. The professional city planner, however, does not have the right to say to what degree the city should develop its resources and potentialities. That, in the last analysis, is up to the people and their leaders. History has shown that aggressiveness and drive in civic leaders is a far greater factor in city growth and expansion than are resources of other kinds. The city planner, the researcher, is able to tell a community what it can do, but he is not empowered to tell a community what it must do, nor is he qualified to tell it what it should do. Good night.
That's the story of Consumer Sand and Gravel. Next week, we will bring you the story of the Dunkley Company, manufacturers of canning factory equipment. You have been listening to another Tuesday evening program in the series of Western Michigan at Work, presented to you at this time by White Sales Corporation, who are local distributors for the Sullivan Line of heavy-duty, water-cooled industrial air compressors.